ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC AFL Daily Podcast. We are virtually at the end of round six, the Western Derby, as they call it. Out west, I would know because I'm from WA, is still ongoing, but all of the other eight games wrapped up on your Sunday night. And on Sunday nights, often, like Fridays, like Saturdays, you get a little bit of takeaway. So we thought we'd have a takeaway, a key takeaway from each game as we work through here on ABC AFL Daily. Ben Cameron, alongside the former Blue and Hawk, Daniel Harford. What a super Saturday it was yesterday.
Super.
Harf as well. Three games of football, all decided by single-figure margins. 9 points, 3 points, 1 point.
Yeah, brilliant. It was awesome, Benny. It was great to watch. I spent a bit of time on the couch on Saturday just watching all the action unfold. So that was nice. And probably on the back of the previous week, Gather Round, which was a great event. I still think it's one of the great weeks of footy for the calendar. The results weren't overly engaging to a degree. Certainly not like they were yesterday. Yesterday was awesome. So more of that, please. I think headquarters will be wrapped with the way the game was played yesterday and today to a point too.
It does lead us beautifully into our half serious, which is our key takeaway.
Yep.
About the state of the game at the moment. What have you got for me, Harf?
Well, state of the game is looking pretty positive. Headquarters cup of whack for lots of things from all and sundry, the media, the fans, the spectators, the clubs, the players at times, but they need a bit of a pat on the back for encouraging the game to be a free-flowing affair and a scoring affair. Last night it was 100-plus each to St Kilda and Adelaide. Today here at the MCG, 100-plus each to Melbourne and Brisbane. And it's on the back of the 666, the laws, the interpretation changes that don't change the game dramatically. But what they've done, and I'm convinced of this, is they've encouraged coaching staffs across the country, because of the opportunities they give you, we're going to attack. We're going to exploit them offensively, not defensively. Now, in recent generations, I think coaches, the balance would be 60-40 defence to attack. I think now we're seeing that flipped on its head to a point where it might even be 70-30 attack to defence. So they all want to run at the game. They all want to go at opposition defences and challenge them on the back of the opportunity they do get through some of the interpretation and law adjustments. And I think it's fabulous. And we watched this game here at the MCG today between Melbourne and Brisbane, and we're enthralled with it. All afternoon it was single-figure margins for most of it. It was goal for goal. It was stressful late in the game for all and sundry, for the fans, for the players, for the broadcasters, because of the outcome was unknown still. And it's being done through scoring, not through defence. It's not 40-44. It's not 60-58. It's 100-100. So we're getting some really positive results from a scoring perspective, and that's engaging your fans much better. Now, everyone loves a close contest, and if it's 60-58, you'd probably be engaged and enthralled anyway. But if you get goals and you can celebrate those moments as a fan, if we think about the fans, well, like we have good fun broadcasting the games, but think about the fans who get to cheer every one of those goals. Rather than hanging on the edge of their seat thinking, when are we going to get our next one? We need another one. It's not never too far away these days.
Yeah.
And I think it's been on the back of some of the adjustments and the opportunities the game is giving coaching staff. So big tick to headquarters, big tick to the coaches who have decided that attack is the best form of defence. Let's get it. Let's hit the scoreboard and see what the opposition can do. It's great for the game.
Yeah, it's a good half serious. I like it. Five games in 2025 where both teams scored 100 points or more. We've already had six.
There you go.
In 2026. How incredible is that?
Is that right? Five for the whole season?
Five for the whole season last year.
Where both teams scored 100 plus.
And we've had six to the quarter mark of this year, because we're quarter of the way through the season.
If I knew that stat, I probably would have come armed with that and dropped it as part of my half series, but that backs it up pretty well, I reckon.
So a key takeaway from each of the games, half, as we roll through here, what is your go-to takeaway? What sort of...
That's a good question. I'm a versatile man.
Yeah.
I like to have a bit of variety in my life.
Yep. Sort of Mexican,
perfect,
Chinese...
Perfect world scenario, I'm a Japanese man.
Right, a bit of sushi.
Yeah, a little bit of sushi, a little bit of chicken teriyaki combo, maybe some yakodon. I do like a little bit of that, and the special California deluxe hand rolls. Oh, delicious. Delicious. So that's probably perfect world, but I don't really mind where, what the number leads me to. Just get me on the phone.
Oh, I'm pretty happy to. I haven't found a food yet that I don't like, but probably Italian or Mexican. If I'm picking right off the top, yeah, I love.
Enchilada? Or
I'm a little bit of Mexican at the moment.
Think of the burrito top situation.
Yeah, burritos. More the burritos. let's launch into it. The game we just watched, Melbourne defeating Brisbane by 2 points. So the back-to-back reigning premiers go down. Level their ledger at 3-3 on the season. Melbourne now 4-2. And I think our key takeaway here, Half, is that Melbourne can play finals, particularly when we've got essentially a top 10 this year.
Melbourne will be putting themselves very firmly in that frame from what we've seen so far. If they can get the job done here at the MCG, and we've been lucky enough to cover them, what was it, four games, I think, this season so far, Sunday at the MCG. They love this slot, and they love this venue, and they are very, very confident of running to the last minute, last second, and getting the result their way. They're a fun team to watch. We've talked about them a few times already on this podcast this year, post-weekend, and they're a fun team to watch, and they're getting great belief in the system that's being employed, or they're asked to be employed by their new coach, Stephen King. And because they're getting wins and they're getting trust in that on the back of it, and they all start to believe, and all of a sudden it's a contagious little affair. So they're fun to watch. My takeaway is Sunday 3:15 is the slot to be. Mm. That's where fun footy happens. Even the game against St Kilda, which would normally be a stodgy affair, that was a free-flowing pinball type scenario. We're getting really good footy Sunday 3:15, which used to be the death spot. It is now alive. So these fans, get on board.
Yeah, they were dancing in the aisles today, and not just because it was Jim's game and they were doing a jig, they were clapping along to the song at the end. And then the bit for me, the Pickett Cousins. Like when they go with the football, they take off with it and take a bounce or do something that most of us couldn't. Gee, it's the kind of joy that brings you through the turnstiles. Like that is just as exciting as football gets for me anyway. I love it.
Yeah, well, it's raw, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's raw footy. It's growing up footy. It's in the park footy. Out the front by yourself, footy, where you just run and bounce and just try and kick the goal. That's what they do. And they've got a really good connection on field, which I don't think we can understate either, those Pickett boys. They're great to watch, and they create a really different dynamic. Some teams have one of those type of players. Melbourne have got two.
Yeah.
And they're hard to stop.
What's better than one Pickett? Two. And we know that the way Melbourne are being coached by Stephen King, we heard Max Gawn speak about this previously with us, is that, look, do what you want on offense. We know that you know how to play the game offensively. So we'll defend in a certain way, but when you've got the ball, just play naturally and be yourself. I like that. North Melbourne were far too good for Richmond by 75 points earlier on today. And Half, the takeaway here is that Richmond's rebuild has certainly stalled.
It's spluttering. Yeah, it is absolutely spluttering at the moment, the Tigers. And I can't really point out why. Now, I haven't been lucky enough to call, I think I've called them once this year, live. So I haven't seen them live, obviously watching them on telly. But I know there's been some injury concerns, but a lot of teams are having that at the moment. This was the year they were expected to bounce pretty high. After 5 wins last year and some addition of some more young talent, there was expected to be a bit more of a bounce here from Richmond. But they are spluttering to a degree that the noise and the rumblings coming out of Punt Road and those that are connected to Punt Road starting to get a bit louder, which is not what Adam Uzay wants to be hearing at this stage of his tenure as coach of the Richmond Footy Club. And it's been disappointing. Now, the flip side is, of course, North Melbourne are coming. And there's been a significant shift in what they are capable of. And I think from what people gave them credit for at the start of the season, I'm certainly in that boat. I gave them not much hope to do too much. But they've proven me wrong already. Obviously, a long, long way to go. But they're getting enormous confidence from what they're doing. But Richmond's build, I thought was on track, but maybe the system and the build is not marrying up at the minute. They need to adjust something.
Yeah, so there's a few things in this. So some of their losses this year, I mean, they had, just to go back a step, they had 2 wins first year under Adam Uzay, really tough year. They had 5 last year, but were very competitive and we all liked what they were doing. We could see what they were doing. You haven't been able to see it this year. They lost to Carlton in a game they probably should have won. Then they've lost by 68 points, 60 points, 42 points, 56 last week against GWS, and now 75 today. Now, part of the problem is that they've got serious injuries to a lot of their experienced players. So Tom Lynch is out with a hamstring injury.
Didn't play much last year. How many games did he play last year, Tom Lynch?
No, not many. But then also the kids, they're injured at the moment as well. So you're not even getting games into them. And then today they lost Tim Taranto to a concussion. Sam Banks had a broken collarbone and Morris Rioli hurt his hamstring. So their depth is going to be tested more, and they're not getting that experience into the next generation.
No, and then that's obviously a problem. But even just systematically, just watching them play, it doesn't look like they have... Well, comparing it to Melbourne, what we see from Melbourne when we watch them, there seems to be a cohesion about what they're trying to do, especially offensively. Richmond, I don't see that with Richmond. I don't see that cohesion, that chemistry on field between the players. So whether or not they're just having troubles trying to adjust to what it is, aren't good enough to do it or execute at this stage of their development, I'm not sure. But it looks poor. And then on the back of that, because they're sort of at sixes and sevens offensively, they get absolutely free-flowing scored against from opposition. We saw that today with the Kangaroos. Now, there's a little caveat today. Like, they were 2-12 at halftime.
Yeah.
You don't coach, your system doesn't coach 2-12. It coaches 7-7, 8-6, and it's a very different ball game, even just psychologically. And your energies can be built off that. You know, you're in the game as opposed to ruining the whole moment. You have a big passage of play, get it to a bloke who should kick a goal, he misses it, the jam's out of the donut.
Yeah.
And that can really affect teams. So 2-12 is a problem, and that's not being coached clearly. So a little caveat on that, but I just think from what I've seen from Richmond this year, they're easy to score against defensively, particularly on turnover, and they don't look to have any cohesion offensively.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It spirals, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It gets out of control for the team. So, Richmond going down by 75 points. Paul Curtis, 6 goals, a career best for Paul Curtis.
He's one of my favourites, Paul Curtis.
Yeah, he's a very good player for North Melbourne at the moment. Last night was a massive game between Adelaide and St Kilda, the final game of the Super Saturday, and a one-point margin in that game. Bizarre match. St Kilda led by 26 points. Adelaide led by as much as 29 points. And yet we have a one-point ball game in the finish. So wild momentum swings. But I think one thing we took out of this game was some things are just much bigger than football. And that was the 12th minute mark of the first quarter. The round of applause for Jordan Dawson and his family after the horrible passing of his brother Jared during the week.
Yeah, and we've had a few things floating in the last little while that just give you a chance to have a bit of perspective and take stock into what's important. And we love footy, and it's a great game, and we invest emotionally in all that sort of stuff. But grand scheme of things, when these events happen, you can sit back and say, yeah, okay, right, but I'm not losing any sleep over this, and we'll be okay. You know, we'll get up tomorrow, and we'll go to work, and we'll have a chat about it with our mates, and we'll come back next week, and we'll have another go with our team. It was obviously tragic circumstances last week for the Adelaide Footy Club, for the Dawson family, clearly. And that club has been through enough in recent years that they need no more of that. I thought the little applause at the 12-minute mark was a lovely touch. Jordan was there with his wife in one of the boxes. The TV cameras got a hold of him and checked on him during the game. And, yeah, even just to be there after the week that would have been for him and his family, I thought it was an amazing performance from him. I don't know if I would have been able to do that, put in his shoes. It's a horrible week. And I'm not surprised to see the fluctuations just from the group on the back of that.
Me either.
Last night. Hard to fathom that sort of stuff and what effect that has on the human as opposed to the footballer and how that affects your performance. I just think we need to be mindful of those things at times and not judge without knowing too much at times in this game. We're pretty quick to pull the trigger on opinions and hot takes and that sort of stuff. But I think last week gave us a bit of perspective to just chill out a little bit and just take the game for what it is a bit and let it roll from there. But, hats off to Adelaide and their fans and one of the Saints fans that were there last night as well. But to the Crows too for being able to rally after being 26 points down early and win the game. It was quite something.
I'm glad you said about, you know, maybe we can be curious rather than
judgmental.
Yeah, Walt Whitman, as characterised in Ted Lasso. I think that's going to be a point that we'll speak about with the Elijah Hollands situation. But just before we move on from this game, I love the Charlie Edwards debut. Pick 21 in 2023. So he's had to wait a little while for his debut. He was using his legs, driving out of the middle. He showed a little bit last night, Charlie Edwards. And apparently Paul Seedsman, who presented him with his jumper, the number 11 jumper at Adelaide, Matty Nick said post-game on pay TV, Paul said, the first game is for free. The coaches will never show an edit, so just go and play. Which that's a great line, isn't it?
That's
like, the first
line.
Game is for free.
Yeah. That's 100% correct. What a great way of framing it.
Yeah.
And he nearly had a big moment too late in the game. He was given the handball at the top of the arc for a shot at goal and just missed. But you're right, he looked pretty comfortable. He was happy to be out there and not overawed by the occasion whatsoever. He was a nice addition to the roster last night. Edwards?
Our takeaway is obviously around Elijah Hollins and the whole situation surrounding him. But maybe our takeaway is be curious, not judgmental. This is what Graham Wright, the CEO of Carlton, had to say earlier today on Sunday.
Since the game, we have been working through a thorough process surrounding the circumstances both leading into and throughout the match and remain in close consultation with the AFL and the AFLPA. We are determined to ensure a considered process, not just an understanding of what happened, but to ensure the key learnings come from this, not just for us, but the broader football community and industry. While Elijah's welfare is front of mind, he will not travel to Perth this week with the team for the weekend's game, and we will work closely with Elijah on what's the next steps forward for him.
Was anyone at the club aware in-game that Elijah was struggling on Thursday night?
We were aware that he was struggling in the game, and he's had, as I said, I'm not quoted on this, that potentially had anxiety previously and panic attacks, and our guys were dealing with him in the game, that obviously he was having some problems.
You mentioned off the top that the club's the most resources they can into Elijah. Do you feel that was the case on Thursday night, or could you have done better as a
three-class? I think everyone's got the right to ask those questions, and we're asking those questions of ourselves. And as I said, we're really determined to get to a better solution for what happened in that game. But as I said, we understand people have got to ask those questions, and we're asking them of ourselves as well.
So that was Graham Wright speaking earlier today. What's your immediate takeaway from those comments from Graham and overall half?
I think it's a really complex situation. Clearly, I don't have any insight on the inner sanctum about what's happened with the investigation or to Elijah or how it got to that point on Thursday night. I do think we shouldn't judge too quickly on this because, you know, what are we, Sunday, and it's the investigation still going on for Thursday night, so it's 3 days and still not finished. And I think that's... But something quite like this, you'd need to make sure you are covering as many bases as possible and finding as much information as possible to be aware of the how and the why that this happened. I must admit, I didn't pick it up on Thursday night watching on the telly. You were on Boundary Side and you saw a few things and were alerted to a few things. I didn't see that. And hearing Graham there talk about we understood that he was struggling through the game, when he said that today in the presser, and I was watching it live, I immediately thought about just his performance in the game, and he just couldn't get into it. That's the read I had on that from Graham Wright, as opposed to we knew he was struggling with an episode, mental health episode, as it's been termed, and we didn't do anything about it. That was my read on that. Because I can't have, considering the amount of time, and Wrighty talked about it there, I can't have the amount of time and resourcing they've put into Elijah Hollins to get back to being a Carlton player again after being delisted at the end of the season and supporting him to a point where he's played really good footy through the first bit of this year for the Blues in a challenging year. I can't have that they would have seen what was happening and just allowed it to continue. There's been too much invested in that young man. There's too much at stake. They know that. Everyone knows that. I just can't have that they didn't do anything about it once if they saw it.
So
it makes sense.
Yeah, a few things from Thursday night. I mean, we record the podcast immediately after the broadcast, and I was a little bit shaken by the whole situation. So halftime, there was some level of communication in the press box, off air largely by people about just the fact that he was struggling so much and the parts of the ground he was running to and how he was behaving. So naturally, you go back down for the second half, and I'm watching him very closely. And as the second half progressed, what came over me was just an incredible sadness that whatever this is, and we didn't know what it was at that point in time,
yep,
it's going to be really bad for the young man, and it's really sad that he's going through it. I'm really interested in the part about when did they first know? So I think that's what they've got to get to the bottom of, Carlton, because they should have known quicker and they should have acted quicker. So I think that's what their investigation will show up for them. And lastly, I've had a little bit of experience seeing with people I know with mental health episodes. And I can absolutely believe that this was a mental health episode. But I think because of the way that some of the others or certain things have been handled by the AFL, people naturally question that, which is really sad in this instance, because Elijah, from what we can see and taking Carlton on face value, is certainly someone who needs needs help and the best of care and privacy and respect to what he's dealing with.
Yeah, and I think part of Wrighty's responses today to some of those questions, where he didn't fully answer the question, I think is because in a situation like this, and we haven't seen many, if any, of these type of scenarios, I think in a situation like this, you want to have all the answers before you... You don't want to drip-feed stuff to this. Let's investigate. Let's find out all we need to know. When do we know? How do we deal with it? And through that, they'll have more information. They might be able to tighten things up from a procedural perspective going forward. So there'll be some... There will absolutely be some key learnings out of this, regardless of when and where they found out. But I don't think it's a topic that you want to drip-feed information if you're not 100% sure how it played out. So I think it was quite responsible the way that Carlton did that today, I must admit.
Geelong and the Western Bulldogs way back on Friday night down at the Cattery. 75-point drubbing the way of Geelong. And it was, as their coach put it, Luke Beveridge, a traumatic night for the Western Bulldogs. And our takeaway is that Sam Darcy's injury is a loss for football fans everywhere, Half.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. He's one of the game's most unique players. He's one of the game's most captivating players. And to have that happen to him is not only extremely sad for him and his footy club, but for footy fans, because we want to see great players out there doing great things. And he has all the potential to be that and a whole lot more. So that's a real big kick in the guts for footy fans. Well, obviously, the Bulldogs and Darcy himself is a given, but for footy fans as well, because he's so rare. He's so unique. And what we've seen so far, there's so much scope for potential, for excellence and for him to be a champion of the game. I hope that this doesn't curtail that. It obviously will for 12 months or so, but hopefully he can get back and be the player that we all think he would be or could be. But yeah, that was shattering. I mean, Luke Beveridge used the word traumatic three times within three sentences post-game in the presser. So it really affected, clearly, and the way he delivered that, it really affected him. And it wasn't just him on the night. Like, it was Lobb goes down, O'Donnell goes down, you got English already out. Richard's been under the pump recently. So it's broader than just Sam Darcy. It's now, from a Blinkett perspective, it's about the Bulldogs' prospects in 2026 now, and how big a dent that is, what's happened to them in the last couple of weeks, considering 2 weeks ago we were probably calling them premiership favourites.
Yeah, we certainly were, and it feels like right now they can't win it, can they, Half?
Well, I wouldn't think without those players you're going to win it. Mm. Well, certainly him for the whole year and then those other players for chunks of it. I think last couple of weeks have proven that it's a challenge for anyone to not have your best players out there.
As you know, Half, I've got a little unicorn list. I feel like too many commentators are calling too many different people unicorns at the moment.
Yes.
There might have been an offending party relating to Sam Darcy over the weekend. So I've got listed for tomorrow night's podcast, four different commentators calling four different players a unicorn.
The other are you allowed? How many unicorns are you allowed? Well, is there only one unicorn?
I think there should only be one unicorn.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I think Darcy's he's the one.
He might be the one. The other person it's a massive blow for is Aaron Norton. So last season with Sam Darcy, he booted 52 goals from 17 games. Without Sam Darcy, he booted 8 goals from 6 games.
Good stat.
So that's a fair drop-off, isn't it?
Research is not just a suburb. Well done.
It's not.
Well done.
The other one is Tom Liberatore, who had another concussion in 2024. He collapsed in the middle of the ground. Since then, he's had sort of four concussions in a 12-month period. So but just a little bit worried for Libba. There'll be smarter minds than us that will decide whether he can continue. He's been referred to the league's concussion panel previously. Whether he is again and whether he does continue will be a little bit of a watch. Your former Hawks, Half, and a son of one of your former teammates, I'd imagine.
Yes.
In Will McCabe, son of Luke.
Son of Luke, yeah.
Who was the 1998 Peter Crimmins medalist. You would have been at that best and fairest night.
Packett was 98 best and fairest.
Apparently.
Are you sure about that?
Apparently.
I don't think so.
That's what was listed in the
that can't
footy
be
record.
Right. That can't be right. He never won a best and fairest. He's a back pocket. he's one of my great mates.
I didn't make it up.
He's one of my great mates.
Seemingly.
Luke McCabe, Packett's his nickname.
So anyway, Nick Watson is on track for an All-Australian Blazer at the end of the year, isn't he?
Yep. My word it is. Second he was. He was second in 98. There you go. Just a bit of data for you.
Oh, maybe I overlooked where it said runner-up. But
yeah,
it,
you've missed
I'm
second.
Sure it said...
Second.
I'm going to find the offending party and clear my name.
But to your point about Nick Watson...
Second's well, pretty good, though, for a back pocket.
Yeah, for a back pocket, probably got some bonus votes because he was a back pocket. Nick Watson, to your point. So we talked about the Pickett Cousins before. So forward half energizers that change games, they're so good to watch. They catch your eye. And this young man, he's surpassed anything I expected from him, I must admit, as an AFL player, his capacity to impact games. When he came in, I was a little bit worried. I saw him play school footy and I thought, yeah, he's a real talent. But I was worried about whether or not that was going to translate to AFL level. And he's proving year on year that he not only his talent, but his work rate and his competitiveness put him in positions where, like yesterday, he was the difference for Hawthorn, kicking 5 goals, career high 5 goals for him. In a game that was decided by, well, less than a kick, but to have a player of his position, of his stature, do what he did, was absolutely altering, game altering. So he's absolutely putting his hand up for to be an All-Australian, and I think he's, well, what are we, still got 18 games to go. It's going to be a long time to get there. But if this is the level that he plays at, then it's a no-brainer, absolute no-brainer. And he's going to be, he'd be Brownlow contender too. If he keeps playing like this, he'll pull lots of votes. He might not get into top three sort of stuff. But
he is eye-catching, isn't he? Yeah.
He's eye-catching. He'll pull votes.
He might pull the most of Hawthorn. Hawthorn, I mean, John Newcombe, through accumulation, gets a lot of votes, but they don't have a really broad group of players that will get a lot of votes at Hawthorn. So he might be the guy who catches the eye. 16 goals through 6 games for Nick Watson, so on track for 64-plus goal season. Jamie Elliott did boot 60 last year and didn't make the team, but Nick does a bit more around the ground.
Yeah.
His numbers have been pretty good. It was a weird game yesterday. I broadcast that match. Hawthorn kicked 4-1-25 inside 8 minutes to no score. And then 6 goals to none in the second term. Port led at half time. Scores level at three-quarter time. And the son of Packets, Will McCabe, kicked a pretty nice goal from wide out to get the Hawks over the line.
From where the arc meets the boundary line on the 50-metre side, left pocket, left flank, gave himself a little bit of room and flushed it. The best kick of his life, probably, and considering the impact of the game it had. It was a magnificent moment for him. And he's been a kid who's had a lot of back troubles in the last couple of years. Drafted a few years ago, obviously debuted yesterday, but had a lot of back troubles they couldn't get to the bottom of and couldn't get right. Had a good preseason, given himself a chance. Good size unit, much taller than his old man. Had a moment and dealt with it. Like, that's not an easy thing to do for a young kid on debut. But as you said before, maybe it's that first games are free here, just go and do your thing and you won't be in the edits anyway. Yep. You'll be fine. Although I reckon he might feature.
Yeah, he might be in the edits.
Yeah,
you're right.
Feature this week.
Crawf won the 1998 Peter Crimmins medal. I got in the lift here at the MCG recently sense. And someone said, you look like you could be Shane Crawford's son. I thought, gee, that is a blow for Crawf.
No, there's a bit of Benny Crawford in you.
I think it's only the hair.
No,
I think
it's the eyes.
About the only
it's the eyes.
Eyes, you reckon.
Yeah, I reckon the eyes.
I was pretty happy with
it. Because I paid attention to that, yeah.
I was...
You've always
felt
been
all
handsome.
Of 5 foot. Five
You've
foot
always
ten.
Been handsome. Now I know why.
No, Croft's a very, very good looking man. I'm not in the same neighbourhood. the Gold Coast Suns and Essendon yesterday. Essendon improving on their season. But Damien Hardwick's comments post game were our takeaway out of this match.
The holding the ball rules like Chuck Lotto at the moment. I sit there and I don't know half the time what's going to happen. We've got a guy that's got an arm pinned. He's waiting for the ball to be called for a stoppage. And the other option is then the guy can dump tackle him. Just blow the whistle and cause a... It's like we've completely gone away from secondary stoppages because we think it kills the game. At the end of the day, we're going to get players hurt. So either blow the whistle on a free kick or at least be consistent in your interpretations throughout the whole game. Because there's one where Bailey Humphrey won a ball, got tackled straight to the ground. I'm not sure how that's holding the ball. Unless the rule changed, let me know, sort of thing. I don't want to get angry. It's Saturday. Want to go home and have a beer and relax on the couch. So, yeah. But let's just fix it.
I love how grumpy he is. But if I know one thing, Huff, surround yourself with good people. So we've got Ray Chamberlain. We don't need to respond to this. Ray responded to Damien Hardwick on our broadcast on Sunday.
Well, what I make of them is more than one thing can be true. So I have a similar sentiment around the application of prior opportunity, more specifically, with holding the ball across the first month and a half of the competition in terms of Chuck Lotto. But one of the comments that Damien made was around a player who's got an arm free and tackle and he's waiting for stoppage and waiting for a ball up. the laws of the game demand, and the umpires have got to implement them, that if a player has an arm free, they must make a genuine attempt to dispose. They can't just secure the ball and look for stoppage. Damien makes a great point, right, around the balance of then a dump tackle and those sorts of things. But I think what's really clear here is if a player has not had a prior, is legally tackled, they must make a genuine attempt to dispose. If they secure that one arm and just secure the ball and look for secondary stoppage, the umpires are instructed to pay holding the ball no genuine attempt.
So that was Ray Chamberlain responding to Damien Hardwick there. And then back on Friday night, we also had a game that went for about 6 hours with lightning strikes between GWS and Sydney. And a takeaway here was that bad kicking is still bad football. Daniel Harford, 8-18, 26 scoring shots to 17-5, which is 23. GWS had more scoring shots and lost.
Yeah, well, I can't put it any simpler than that. And they're the moments from a coaching perspective, and we touched on it before with Richmond 2-12 at halftime. You don't coach it. You can't coach bad kicking, but sometimes it just happens and it can destroy not only games, but it can destroy seasons. And I'd hate to think that when the Giants get to the back end of the year and they're looking for that win that they need to lock in a top 10 spot, even top 6 spot, hopefully for their sake, and they look back and they go, oh, that one against Sydney. And I must admit, I got me thinking about the doco where,
Adam Kingsley
was talking about the way that Sydney had them mentally. Now, I know they went on to win that game after that famous spray, went on to win that game. But it got me thinking about Sydney and the Giants and who's got the upper hand in the emotional stakes there. And it was Sydney again on the weekend. And maybe that plays a part for the Giants in front of goal. I don't know. But, yeah, your takeaway is perfect. Bad kicking is still bad footy.
Also, Sydney number one this season for inside 50s, points for and points against. So,
yeah, they're a good number one seed for all that stuff.
That's a good record.
They're probably a team we don't talk about much as premiership contenders. We've talked about the Bulldogs, we've talked about Hawthorn, obviously Brisbane are always in calculations. But the Swans have bounced back beautifully from what happened last year.
Yeah, they are coming back this season. Don't worry about that. The Western Derby is still rolling. We'll have that covered on tomorrow night's episode. Half, love your work as always.
Always a pleasure. What's for Sunday takeaway?
A little bit of Mexican on the way home, I think. I love a burrito.
I'm thinking a piece of flake on the way home.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah.
A little bit of fish and chips.
Yeah, a little fish and chip dinner for two type number.
This has been ABC AFL Daily.